ass, not so giant women. I don't know what that song was. I just made it up.
Should make that part of the jingle.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Maybe I'm just doing it for this political power episode. Maybe it's specific.
Maybe it's a political jingle.
Yeah. So this is kind of a vague title, isn't it?
We're coming up to a local election, so of course that makes me think about that.
Yes. Definitely coming up on the election season over here, too. So, oh boy. Yeah, I don't want to think about it. Well, we need clowns. Just usually not in the government.
Well, let's see how our favorite teenage, pre-teenage, whatever age, star shirt wearing clown of a boy is doing.
Political power. Here we go.
We are the Crystal Gems. We'll always save the day.
Hey, we can figure things out together.
A little look on Beach City as well. Okay, we see this week we open on our main three gems, or main three senior gems, about to conduct some kind of experiment on one of Peridot's robonoids, hitherto known as the Perabots, to see if a device Pearl is cooking up can knock it out and therefore stand a chance against whatever tech Peridot might be bringing to them. However, Pearl's efforts don't result in knocking out the Romanoid at all, but do knock out all of the electricity in town. All the lights go dead that night and are still dead the next morning. Next morning, Mayor Dewey arrives at the beach house, asking a confused Stephen if he can speak to the tall one, the purple one, or the hot one. And indeed, the hot one comes to the door and explains that the power might be on as soon as tonight or as late as never. Mayor Dewey has to go back into town to damage control, trying to reassure the citizens that the power will be back on by tonight, and handing out badges and glow sticks to a bunch of what he calls the boardies, the boardwalk residents and workers. This reassures them. Stephen goes back home and overhears the other three talking about how serious things could be about to get. And as soon as they know he's there, however, they're all, oh, nothing's wrong. Let's play cards. And like, how we play cards in the dark? Oh, we'll just light a fire. It'll be fine. But Stephen recalls Mayor Dewey's words that when the sun goes down, so does the town. And in fact, back in town, as day turns to night, Stephen finds that the boardies have turned on Mayor Dewey. They're quite irate, including his dad, the pizza family, some chap with an eye patch, the Fryman family, and Onion readying a baseball bat because, goodness, this child... Dewey tries to offer them shallow reassurances. It doesn't work, but Stephen explains that he's just trying to keep you safe. He just didn't want you to worry and panic and hurt yourselves more, and then has the internal revelation that that's why the others haven't told him anything about Peridot. He goes back home and pushes through the everything's fine to say, I want to know what's going on. I know you're trying to keep me safe and not worrying, but I need to know. And they admit they don't know what's going to happen, but they're scared. And upon this conclusion, this conversation, the lights come back on in Beat City. And that's this week.
So we're two episodes away from the end of the first season and we're still ramping up for something to happen.
Yeah, so whatever's going to happen hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
But we get an allegory of panicking the citizenry versus panicking Stephen.
It's building some ambiance of, anticipation here.
Oh, definitely. I at least could certainly feel Stephen's apprehension that, of course, he could tell something was going on and feeling that the will be fine is it's not working. But he understands why they did it. He just wants to stop doing it. You can definitely, there's a palpable atmosphere of dread.
Yeah.
And in fact, the townies are kind of in on it as well. We're going to have things like sudden power outages, and this kind of adds to the atmosphere because, well, while the gems are really the only ones in on the whole Peridot thing, now this gives them a reason to be confused or scared about what's going on.
And the lead politician in the area has really no idea what to do besides just kind of keep telling them, oh, it'll be fine, just vote for me, here's a glow stick.
Yeah, which he says, what else could he do? And to an extent, he's right, though, he, as Stephen demonstrates, he could handle it a little better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're now up to doing experiments, trying to figure out, which is good, you know, it's proactive. But, you know, Stephen is finding himself getting out of bed and following them outside to see what they're up to. Like, that they're clearly trying to hide from him, that they're preparing for something. So
Pearl is essentially playing with EMPs that don't work on robonoids, or at least that they recover from very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm. It's not a robot friend. It's a robot disruptor. Pearl got lonely, so she built herself a robot friend, says Amethyst. Cute. But yeah. So, but most of the episode is just like Mayor Dewey trying to cover his own ass.
Yeah, and tried to look far more in control than he actually is. And Stephen ended up reassuring the populace more than he did, arguably.
It's interesting that he thinks he's protecting them by lying to them, and instead of trying to figure out like what is behind this. I mean, he does go to the gems because he figures, oh, it's probably some crap they're doing again. But when there's nothing that he can fix, he's just like, well, I have to go out and make contact with them, completely meaningless contact, to tell them that things are fine, even though I have no idea if they're fine.
Just to sort of reassure them that the town, the world is still functioning, that there is order, there is civilization.
Yeah.
So his goals in some ways are noble. They're just cack-handed.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I guess in Mayor Dewey's situation, he made it pretty clear that his perception of his role there is to run interference between like the boardies getting restless and the perceived local authority, but he's not doing like the other end of it where he's actually taking care of anyone.
No, and yeah, it's not like we see him down at whatever Beach City has for a power station or whatever.
Right. I mean, like I said, the first thing that he does when he finds out there's no power is to come and yell at the gems and find out, what the heck did you do? I've been mayor of this town long enough to know they had something to do with whatever this is, which is, you know, that's an attempt to get to the source before he goes out to lie to everyone. But, you know, he doesn't make any kind of attempt to make a deal with them. He doesn't try to get any specific information out of them. Just, you know, Pearl is super dismissive, says like, why don't you just go back to hunting and gathering? She just doesn't care. But I mean, in their defense, it's like they have bigger things on their plate. They don't know what's coming to get them. So the last thing that they're worried about is, oh, we have to make sure that everybody in Beach City is comfortable with their electricity. They'll live. So
yeah, and they certainly don't want Mayor Dewey up in their business while they're trying to sort all this out.
Right. Mm. And Pearl's idea is a pretty good one. Like, since they don't know really what they're looking at, but they're worried about being like outdated and stuff, that she might, Peridot might be coming with advanced tech. It's a good strategy. Like, let's disrupt their technology and then we'd be on equal terms theoretically. So, except that it doesn't work.
Yeah. Looks like she's tried to give it another go. She's playing with her robot friend again later, but we have no idea if anything comes of that.
Yeah, she said she'd have to take parts out of the washing machine and Stephen would have to wear the same shirt for a while. That was amazing. It's a great joke. No problem, he says, and rips off his shirt, and there's another identical one underneath it right then. That was great. Like, the whole timing of the joke and everything was great. Delivery and all. Love it. So we also get the revelation in this one that Mayor Dewey thinks Pearl is hot.
Yes, that was cute. Mm-hmm. And that he was all blushing and straightening his tie and stuff when she came down.
Yeah. Well, I can see that they both have pointy noses. That's about it. She did not seem in any way to reciprocate this attraction. She's just like, whatever, you're annoying, buzz off.
Yeah, I don't think she even acknowledges it, or that maybe she does, and that's why she's so deadpan. She doesn't want to give him an in.
She is utterly uninterested in him on every level. And the way that he just takes a stab in the dark, like, are your sisters home? And he's like, my sisters? Like, nobody knows what's going on, what his relationship is with these.
Your caretakers?
Yeah. What did the Maheshwaran say? The guardians? I think they called them irresponsible parents. Caretakers, guardians. Everybody's confused about Stephen's family. Well, that's fine.
Mayor Dewey did make it sound a bit like as soon as the sun went down, it would be like that scene in The Simpsons when the power stopped and people just erupted into riot a second later.
Yeah. Well, we've got another story about another town, Ocean Town, where things went belly up immediately.
And you can spot as soon as Stephen says, but I've never heard of Ocean Town. Exactly. Yeah. No one's going to say.
Like, you mouthed it along with them. You saw it coming.
Yep.
Yep. Then they made an Ocean Town joke a little later in the episode.
Too soon.
At least we're not in Ocean Town. It's interesting to kind of observe who laughed at that, because there were some people in the crowd who didn't get it. It was primarily the younger people, like the children, the youth of Beach didn't know what that was, but the older people did. All the parents did.
Yes. A
kind of reaction. It's interesting.
I don't know if we'll ever find out about that, or if that'll just remain what TV Tropes calls a noodle incident.
Oh, noodle incident. At this point, at least, it's a noodle incident. It's a little bit like in Joking Victim, where they said, we don't make our own donuts here, not since the accident. And there's a silhouette on the wall with caution signs around it. Mm-hmm. So that's another noodle incident.
Yeah. And I suppose the heroes can't really rally the people of Beach City around, because, again, they just have no idea what they're dealing with in any way.
Yeah.
So they can't even say where you fight for your town, because fight whom or what in which way?
Right. The gems don't even know. So, but Stephen had a pretty good speech for someone who also didn't know what was going on.
Well, there's his bringing people together power again, although it didn't entirely let Mayor Dewey off the hook. At least it stops the crowd lynching him and onion kneecapping him, probably.
Stephen's becoming a good little politician. Despite being a child.
Maybe he's the one destined to run against Mayor Dewey.
I mean, there would be like no contest. Stephen is just so charismatic, you know?
Mm. Yeah, I've said it before. It's not that Mayor Dewey is a bad mayor, but he does seem to have held his spot partly by the complete lack of any rival whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, in this case, you know, he's acting like he needs to hold off riots that would happen if he didn't just make empty promises. But now he's acting like he doesn't deserve it when his promises don't come through. And then they're all mad and he's just like, oh, calm down, everyone. But you lied. It's like Nineveh is out there yelling at him, like, you lied to us. I mean, at first she's like, oh, I trust this man. And then she's like, nope, you lied. Tip the truck! She's the one that yelled that.
Were even his bodyguards nowhere to be seen?
His bodyguards were in the crowd.
Oh, that's...
They actually were.
So they were.
Although his son was not. Buck, at least, was not against him. And he was looking dismayed when his dad's truck got tipped over. But he did not help.
No.
So, still hard to watch that happen to your dad.
I was just trying to mentally go through the crowd. I somehow missed the bodyguard. We've got that whole, there's not that many people to keep in check either.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And I mean, you got Onion in there. He's an agent of chaos by himself.
In fact, I think, we've certainly got far more visible buildings than we have people to go in them at this point.
Indeed. Well, it's supposed to be, I guess, a touristy town. So most of the faces that we see again and again are, they're the shop owners and the people who work there.
True.
So we haven't really seen a whole lot of like their personal houses. We haven't seen where Lars lives.
No. We have seen where Lars lives. He's the one we have seen.
We've seen his house in his backyard, but not like his home life or anything.
So that's certainly true.
I haven't seen a lot of that. We've seen, and Greg doesn't have a home. He just has his van. So, we mostly hang out at the beachfront property there, the businesses. So, I don't know. So do you think Dewey is kind of right or more wrong than right when he says it's not lying when you're the mayor?
I think he's wrong in the broader sense. I think he has the capacity to be right in the even broader sense of sometimes you do have to be economic of the truth to avoid hurting people. But I don't think it's quite the same as it's not lying if you're the mayor.
It's politics, which is lying.
like the gems lying to Stephen, if Stephen wasn't, a quasi-gem superhero, then, you'd also be able to far far more readily go with the, no, he can do nothing with this. There's just no point worrying him.
Mm-hmm.
But as it stands, he is a part of it. So lying to him isn't going to do any good in the long run anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, you could argue that not panicking him for the next few days, weeks, whatever, until Peridot and friend show up is worth it. But yes, I think this one, you get the message, insofar as it has a message, that sometimes you do have to lie to people for their own good, but you can't just use that to hide behind and dismiss the fact you are indeed lying.
Mm-hmm. Right, because you recognize that if you are the leader of a group or you are the authority or perceived to be in some situation, then sure, you mostly want to worry, you do want to worry about the comfort of your people under your care, but only to a certain extent, where if you cross that line, it's just distracting them from something that can actually hurt them.
Yeah, so. And specifics like telling the town that, oh, the power will be back on by this evening, when that is entirely something he has no basis to say, and can basically, right, unless he gets very lucky, can only be proved wrong when the time comes and the power doesn't come back on.
Right, that's the best case scenario that Pearl said.
Yeah, so at there you could say you could have told them more of the truth at least.
Yeah.
This at the very least is only band-aiding the wound.
Right. I guess he's just looking at the very short-term possibilities that, like, if the lights do come back on by sundown, then he looks like a hero. And what he said, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like what we were talking about earlier, that if you just decide that the pandemic is over, then everyone's just like, oh, great. That's great news. And then it's not true. You look like a clown.
Yeah, and also this ties to the fact that he was not actually doing anything about the original problem other than telling Pearl that he wanted it to be fixed. If he had been working on something that he hoped would bring about the power, that might be another thing, but he wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't even call any power company or anything as far as I know. But I mean, he did, I guess, confirm with Pearl that they did have something to do with it, and they're just not worried about it because, you know, they've got bigger fish to fry. The gems do. They're definitely preoccupied. But, you know, it could be as early as tonight and as late as never. So, and Steven's like, we'll help you clean up this mess. And Garnet yells, no, we won't. I love that.
I just love how blankly Garnet said that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And she's just somewhere else knowing what's going on. So, but she does not, in fact, know what's coming. So that's a little scary. I mean, it got real serious right there when she finally admitted to Steven, we don't know what's coming. We don't know what we're facing. We're scared because she's a modern gem and we're going to get overwhelmed.
I guess there's also not enough for a future vision to work with.
That's what I was wondering, because, I mean, obviously, if you have a character that can predict the future, but she's still just as helpless, then she must need more context to be able to predict anything.
Yeah, and we've seen before it is kind of based on possibilities, probabilities, things that can and or are likely to happen, but she doesn't have any more information to work with than she has next to no knowledge about what modern homeworld is like. So presumably she at least needs raw material to base her predictions on, and anything that's entirely out of context for her would be essentially just a superpowered guess.
Yeah, at least based on this episode, that's what it seems like. I mean, because otherwise, if you could just fast forward a couple of days into the future or something and see what's going to play out, you could take some steps to stop it. But it seems like she's flying blind.
Well, my interpretation so far has been that she doesn't literally see through time itself, but sort of weighs up a bunch of things that she knows and a few things she doesn't know and stitches them all together.
Yeah. Gotta be hard in this situation where the unknown is the thing that's scary and she can't fix that. She can't do anything like she normally could.
Well, yeah, if it's been 5,000 years-ish, if we're operating on that kind of scale for her as well as the others, in which things have at least been kind of probable and easy to peek out for her, then this has got to be particularly scary for her that it's effectively blank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that she did come clean with her concerns about it in a very concise and realistic way. You know, and I mean, Steven replied with some attempts at comforting words, and that whatever it is we're facing, we'll be there for each other. And, you know, that's as much as he can do. But yeah, it's scary to see someone like Garnet say, "We're scared."
And those words can only do so much if there's like a war fleet on the way or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw that under the house they had the light cannons.
So yeah, I saw that. I wonder if they were going to tie in, and if they are, I guess not quite right away.
I was curious how the hell they got them there, because those light cannons were in Rose's secret armory. And supposedly only Pearl knows where that is.
Well, Pearl and Lion.
Pearl and Lion, and now Steven. But Steven obviously didn't help.
Because he didn't seem to expect them there.
Yeah, he definitely was not involved in bringing them there. So, and it seems like they mostly have to involve Steven to get Lion to cooperate. So either Pearl got others to help her bring those light cannons there, or she found a way to bring them there herself. And I'm just thinking about her description of where that cave is. They used a warp pad to get somewhere, but then it was a 3-mile hike and then they climbed. So, you know, how the heck did she get those light cannons?
Amethyst can lift them as a dog copter or something.
I wouldn't be surprised if Amethyst could help, but that would mean that Pearl would have to show Amethyst that cave. So maybe she did.
Yeah. Maybe this is bigger than her wanting to be the special one.
Yeah, and she was willing to show it to Steven at this point. So I was wondering about the logistics, because, I don't know, recently I had some completely unrelated argument with another fan about the light cannons and how come if they had one light cannon that they did use to defeat the Red Eye in episode 2. If Pearl knew there were 3 more somewhere else, why didn't she go get them? And I was saying, well, because it's in this isolated place and she didn't want to tell the others where this cave was. Plus it would take a while to get over there. And Pearl has her whole, like, at least portrayed at this point to be a refusal to take any other shapes. So unlike Amethyst, who, you know, could just, I don't know, purple puma that, or turn into a dog copter and carry it, or fly or something. We have Pearl, who insists on walking and climbing. So she's stronger than a human, but how's she going to lug that thing by herself?
It's an unanswered question, but it's not a plot hole, because we've just coined a few answers right here and now.
So, oh, sure.
Yeah.
We don't have to know exactly how, but I do wonder how in canon, how they carted those things over there. But it is sobering to think, oh, they've got a whole 3-pack here. She called it the Courtesan Trio. That's their big weapon. And that's as ready as they can be.
Yeah, and that's their big weapon that they broke out one of to deal with particularly Arran's corrupted gem monster. So how much it might do against whatever's coming.
Mm-hmm. Boy, yeah, definitely kind of gives a feeling of stakes without saying anything. Probably Steven looked at it and got a little unsettled looking at it and overhearing. That was a really interesting scene there, by the way, just him overhearing the way they talk to each other, arguing about what they're facing. And, you know, this just like, let's just mash them all. Oh, well, too bad. You know, I'm glad somebody thought of that. Let's just mash everything.
Yeah, well, I definitely got the feeling he was unsettled upon seeing the Courtesan Trio just sitting there.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And compounds their keeping things from him if this is their massive weapon and he doesn't expect to see it there at all.
Yeah, he's probably feeling a little bit like, wow, I mean, it's super obvious that y'all are dealing with something. And then I show up and I'm like, oh, our best friend, Steven, let's play guards. So, I don't know, he probably felt really condescended to at that point. It's got to suck.
Senior gems might even have thought, can we at least play cards for a couple of hours and not just have to sit here and think about what's coming?
Yeah, they don't know how much time they have to prepare. They don't know what would constitute preparing, besides, I guess, getting those cannons ready. It's something, but it seems like they don't have a lot of confidence in what it could do. A little scary. Let's just conscript Onion.
Yeah.
He was ready to beat the shit out of Mayor Dewey.
Oh, yeah.
Just release Onion onto the gems.
You can imagine Peridot trying to cope with him.
Oh, my goodness.
What are you? Are you a Steven? Why do you have no audio receptors?
Yes. Now I think I need fan fiction of that. Peridot and Onion. Mm.
Follow-up questions!
I guess I could make a Mayor Dewey-related probing question for you.
Oh, that makes a change. What do we got?
Well, kind of going off of what I've already said, but expanding on that a little, we could say, so Mayor Dewey knows he's in charge of a town that's always been being attacked by monsters and having all these disasters and whatnot, but he knows that it's related to these gems. So, but I mean, he clearly demonstrated in this episode, he doesn't even know what their relationship is with Steven or their names or anything. So like, do you think the mayor should have tried to build an alliance with the gems, or should the gems have been first to reach out to him, or what?
I think a bit of both. I mean, we've definitely more than established that there is no masquerade in place in this show, at least not in this town.
Well, you mean like that they're not hiding, like, oh, they're not trying to hide from humanity, that they're superheroes.
Yeah, and they don't do the, oh, that giant Fugu creature in the sky was a gas leak, water, weather balloon.
Right, so there's no pretense of normality.
I mean, there is at least some wisdom in, you handle the supernatural stuff, I'll handle the actual governing the town part. But I think when it comes to crises, especially, well, we saw some way back stuff like, you just saved most of Beach City, that they should have more open lines of communication or plans in place. Or,
yeah.
Granted, there's only so much they could do. I mean, probably wouldn't hurt to try to evacuate the town sooner or later, given the, we don't know, but Lapis did indeed use the word devastating and, you know, devastating the Frymans and the Pizzas and the Onion Clan certainly isn't going to help matters.
True.
So I think building a better rapport and things like that, I mean, you're probably not going to be able to get the gems to come and do presses or anything. Well, Amethyst, you probably don't want to even try that.
Oh, goodness. I honestly would pay to see that, though. Yeah. Not been that much interaction, I guess, with the mayor, but I'm thinking of how he reacted to them in Ocean Gem, and he just got up in Garnet's face with a megaphone and started yelling at her. That's like, not great political skills there, Mayor Dewey, but he panicked.
Yeah, and while they've gone to it, it's not quite the, it's definitely also not the he and the whole town blame them for everything that happens thing either. He holds them responsible for stuff like the power loss, and he got up in Garnet's face, as you say. But they haven't been regularly torch and pitchforking the temple to try to drive the gems out as the source of the problem.
It's true.
And from what little bits we've seen so far, it seemed like there was sort of more, they built a town where there was already some gem stuff happening rather than the other way around.
Definitely believe that. So, yeah, there apparently is absolutely no like understanding or lines of communication between the local human government and the gems, even though the humans are at risk because of stuff that's happening with the gems.
So maybe Mayor Dewey, who however long he's been mayor, is leaning too hard on the keep them placated if they're ignorant thing, but it'd be like the pandemic if they just said, oh, don't go near people and don't go out and wear some masks and sanitize, but we're not telling you why.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just kind of thinking about any interaction that Mayor Dewey has had. I mean, it's mostly just been his primary motivation seems to be in the good graces of the town and not actually to do anything to help them.
Yeah, we haven't seen much in the way of actual mayoring from him.
Yeah, he does a lot of like ceremonies. He was dedicating a bench recently, or
yeah,
you know, that giant bowl of ice cream that was used as a joke in Joking Victim.
I mean, granted, it's not like he'd make gripping television him doing municipal budgets all day or something.
Right. But he likes to drive around in his election mobile and, you know, be in a suit and make appearances. So I wonder what he is even doing. We haven't seen any staff or anything besides bodyguards.
Yeah, I mean, also, goodness knows, we haven't seen any military or law enforcement or anything of the like in Beach City.
It's true.
We haven't seen so much as a beat cop, so.
No. Yeah, the closest that we've had is that Connie mentioned her dad is a security guard, but they don't even live in Beach City.
Yeah. So obviously these people aren't being brought to bear in times of significant crisis either.
Mm-hmm. Somebody needs to get their crap together. I mean, come on, Dewey.
Even the lowest crime, happiest, peacefulest beach towns at least have, you know, a couple of people in blue wandering the beat, even if they don't end up doing anything. So there's sort of, while it's a touchy subject at the moment, there's sort of no anything like that in Beach City whatsoever to use as a resource.
Right. Not even to get a cat out of a tree or whatever.
Yeah. So they certainly can't use them as warm bodies or boots on the ground in the face of a gem crisis.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Of course, that's probably also why there's child labor going on. Nobody's going to catch you and send you to school.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're very much left to wonder what actual laws there are in Beach City or how anyone is maintaining them whatsoever.
Yeah.
I mean, well, anything Onion does.
Yes, good point.
Huh. I mean, I know the catchphrase is strong communities don't need cops, but strong communities usually don't have Onion just blowing up buildings regularly.
I guess they probably figure, you know, with Onion, as long as you can keep him happy with skee-ball tickets and letting him drive around on top of ketchup packets using his moped, then for now that little hooligan is placated.
They figure maybe he's more like a force of nature. You can't talk down a tornado.
Sooner or later, he's going to start demanding sacrifices. We'll have to have a Department of Onion Affairs once Mayor Dewey gets his office organized.
Onion as an adult, there's a weird image to contemplate.
Oh, boy. No, I don't know how I feel about that.
his dad certainly has some of his traits, but he doesn't look like an older version of his son, like some characters do.
Yeah, maybe if Onion grew a beard. maybe Ocean Town was Onion's fault.
Oh, there we go.
And he does seem to like arson. He had fire everywhere in the first major Onion episode, Onion Trade.
Well, pretty and destructive. What else is going to do it for him?
Don't know.
Certainly none of the older people seem to be concerned that he was going to brain the mayor or whatever with his baseball bat. Either that or they just were not going to try to get in the way.
Yeah. Well, kind of a fun factoid about that is the earliest storyboards of these scenes with Onion and his bat had nails sticking out of the bat.
Yes.
And the censors removed that. So now it's only just an Onion beat down with a bat, not a bat with nails sticking out.
I don't think that's going to stop him, censors.
Nah. When you've downgraded to what we already see, it was originally much worse. Oh, goodness. Oh, Onion. Oh.
Well, at least they're stopping something besides double entendres.
Yes. To be honest, yeah, I do prefer to see like any kind of censorship and whatnot to be more about sending more messages about safety and stuff than to worry about what's going to corrupt the children's morals.
I'm okay with giving children a moral message. Don't baseball bat your way out of any given situation.
Yeah, I would honestly be happier with a little less casual violence. That's just me, I guess. So I'm afraid that we don't have any music to talk about this time, even though we had two songs last time.
No, the best we had was the Mayor Dewey chant again.
It's true. I feel like there wasn't even very much environmental music, if I remember correctly. It was very stark.
I did think I caught one of the crowd doing the Mayor Dewey chant when their opinion turned around, though.
Yeah, they did. Mayor Dewey. That was funny. That his vehicle makes that noise. He made a comment about his giant head on his vehicle, that he was being copied by a local exterminator. Did you see that truck did show up?
Oh, I didn't catch that.
It's in a couple of angles where the whole crowd is gathered. There, one of the vehicles that's nearby is a big truck with a head on it, but it's like a fly, and the name of the company is Your Fly Is Down.
Oh.
I really love that. I just give you the payoff right away. He's totally copying me. Here it is. Here's the copycat.
Oh, I missed the ball a bit on some of the crowd scenes, I think.
that's a good name for, a really good name for an exterminator. I wonder if there actually is one with that name.
It's a Springfield-level business pun.
Yeah. Well, I do know that Rebecca Sugar is a big fan of The Simpsons. She has like an independent comic that makes a bunch of references to The Simpsons. Actually, it's a really sad comic.
Ooh.
It's about somebody who has a traumatic brain injury and then can only speak in Simpsons references.
Ah.
It's like really, really sad. So,
ow.
Oh boy. That's something that's, it's extremely her, you know what I mean? Like, it's very Rebecca to say, like, oh, if somebody got this injury, whether they could only speak in very specialized coded messages, and it turns into something that's cartoon references, you know?
Dark Sugar.
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean, some of her stuff is super, like, I don't know. I mean, even this cartoon gets very dark sometimes, but it's still sort of mainstream levels of darkness.
Mm. Well,
some of her comics, my goodness.
Yeah, well, she doesn't have nearly as much, oh no, you can't do this on kids' TV messages.
Yep. So, can you guess what I did for food? Because there was something.
There was the abortive attempt at the crying breakfast friend's breakfast.
Mm-hmm. There was.
What else was there? What did we do?
Yeah, I did try to make the crying breakfast friends frozen dinner, but I also did add some melted frozen ice cream.
Like, oh, of course.
Unfrozen ice cream, I should say. That was not really a recipe. That was more of a side thing where I just took some recipe or I took some different flavors of ice cream and wrapped them up in wax paper or something. And just, you know, the melty part happened all by itself. I didn't have to do anything. So, but I did make that the same day that I tried to figure out what the hell this crying breakfast friend's TV breakfast was. And I got a laugh out of the fact that, you know, when I looked really closely at the board art, like there was no explanation for what the food was, but it said not a source of nutrition on it. Like, thanks, guys. Yeah, I kind of studied this thing. And so I'm looking at this model sheet, hoping for some kind of guidance for what kind of food was Steven trying to eat. And, you know, they gave me nothing. So what it looked like to me, kind of looking at the high-res image, it looked like there was bread and there was some kind of something that might have been an egg and some kind of yellowish glop or something. And I'm just thinking, how can I translate this into breakfast foods that could be frozen and be warmed up in a microwave? I don't know. So I concluded that this was French toast, fried egg, and hash browns.
Okay.
That's kind of very cool. So that's basically what I ended up doing. I even bought like a kitty partition tray to put it in. Because, you know, I mean, I got a nephew. Maybe he'll eat off those one day. But I made French toast, which, you know, if the listeners don't really know how to do that, my tip is that you would take an egg and some milk and some cinnamon and I think some vanilla, mix that up, soak your bread in it, put it in a skillet, and cook it on both sides, and you got French toast.
French toast, yep.
Good stuff. Do y'all do like French toast there?
We do, not as often, but it's definitely known. I've definitely had it many a time.
I like French toast. So I did that and I made my fried egg on the same skillet. With my little trick for that is once you put the egg on there, you know, you're not turning it over. So you want that yolk to get cooked. I don't really like runny egg. I don't like runny egg, but I like it to be mostly cooked. So you have to wait for the white to get kind of more opaque toward the center. And then I put a cover on it, turn it down from medium to low and put a cover on it until it's more cooked. So that's good stuff. And I didn't do anything fancy for the hash browns. I'm trying to remember whether I shredded my own potatoes or whether I just used like frozen potatoes. I can't remember right now what I did, but I know I put them on the skillet, the same skillet. I cooked everything on the same thing. I tried to make it all like realistic. Like I put this film over it and put it inside of a box. I put the box art on it and everything, tried to make it all cool. And that's what I did. I put it next to my frozen or my previously frozen ice cream. And that was my recipe for the episode. And then I ate it and it was good.
That sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could get behind that kind of breakfast, cartoon related or otherwise.
Yeah. It's always fun when there's like a really iconic dish. But for this one, I'm just like, you know what? It's food. I'm going to make it. So it's not one of those memorable dishes, but it was fun to do. I still have the box that has the not a source of nutrition part on it with the crying waffle and stuff. pretty funny.
The dedication to the craft, the detailing.
There was nothing else in Steven's freezer, I noticed. It was like, get some food for your childhood.
Yeah, I was surprised there wasn't like 47 crying breakfast frame things, to be honest.
Right? For all meals, this crying breakfast lunch, crying breakfast snack, crying breakfast dinner.
He seems like the sort of kid who, when he finds a particular breakfast food or something he likes, that he'll stick with it and only eat for some time.
Yeah.
Heck, many an adult does that, so, you know, can't entirely blame him there.
That's true, that's true. No Cookie Cat branded stuff in there. There was just nothing.
I guess we're yet to have the big Cookie Cat brand revival.
He's got a Cookie Cat alarm clock in his room.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that a few times. I spotted that.
Yeah.
If only I had known that!
Let's see. Let me get into factoids over here. What did they say about this episode for description? Gems cause a power outage in Beach City, and Steven helps Mayor Dewey do damage control. Yep. Straightforward.
Yeah, that's what happens. And while there's an emotional arc in some way, that's all that happens.
Yeah. Really, this close to the finale, it's just a couple of episodes that are just all about something's about to happen. And then the next episode, something's about to happen.
And indeed, without knowing the next couple episodes, of course, I don't know if particular things tie straight back in. But it does feel that if you absolutely had to squeeze them in and lose an episode, it might not be too damaging if this was the one you lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did include this in the Steven bomb. I don't think you could show it afterwards.
Well, yeah, that's part of what I was thinking, because I knew you said that some got pushed forward, and I thought that was less the ones that weren't, less a matter of essentialness to the plot as opposed to how much sense it would make to view it later on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this, of course, would make no sense pretty much anywhere but here.
Yeah, they'd have to like release it saying it was a lost episode or something. Mm.
But yeah, if you had to drop one, and I'm not saying the, you know, drop all the episodes you don't need thing, but if you had to, this one I'd say would be the one that could go.
Yeah, you know, I would agree with you. I mean, I can't really talk too much about the rest of the season, obviously, but someone a really long time ago asked me to like rank the episodes of the first Steven bomb. And I said, even though I really appreciated some aspects of this episode, and I'm not going to insult the work of our boarders, which this time was Hillary Florido and Katie Mitroff, who gave us Alone Together. So, I mean, they're fantastic. But
it's always fun to hear Joel Hodgson as well.
Yes. I think the wording that I used, I said this one was kind of the stinker of the Steven bomb because it was, I don't know, it was what we just watched. There was very little action and we're all waiting for something to happen. And it's about Mayor Dewey lying to people.
Yeah, I think we've talked before about how while neither of us would really advocate any kind of only watch the important ones viewing, there are some that if you had to cut it down for whatever reason, there are a few that could safely disappear and not harm those around it.
Yeah, and we've gotten a lot of those lately with things like the Shirt Club episode and stuff like that. So, I mean, I could certainly go forward in my life not needing to know that Buck was a jerk to Steven and made fun of his art. And then the gems didn't want to help him.
Brand spanking new mint inbox.
Well, I don't have much more about this episode besides merchandise, so
let's head to the merch table.
I decided to make it just a little bit related to what we did, even though there's no Mayor Dewey merch. There's none.
Oh, that won't help him get elected.
Yeah. So speaking of getting him elected, though, I decided that this is when I'll show you some of my Steven Universe related buttons because he was giving out buttons. So here are my Steven Universe pinback buttons.
Ah.
I put on a big ribbon like this. So
cool.
I'll show you some designs. I've got Garnet.
We've got a Garnet, of course. We've got, is that a pearl below her? Yep, it's just resolving now. Yep.
A lot of them are all just kind of generic art of the characters, but they're fun to put on like a bag or something. But
oh, I like that amethyst running one.
Yeah, it's running toward the camera. Yeah, showing up well.
Yeah, they sort of go in and out. I think there's only so much we can do about that.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to show our viewers which ones I'm showing you, but there's a running Steven.
Yeah.
I used to have a bunch of these on my bag, and then I was always just terrified that they were going to fall off. Some of them are harder to replace than others.
Yeah.
Most of them are just stock art. They're like vectors.
Yeah. At first I thought you were showing me braces, suspenders.
Yeah, Those do exist, and I actually don't have any.
Yeah, I thought this might have just been plain suspenders or braces, wherever you're listening from. The things that hold your trousers up, and you'd stuck the badges to them.
I've got a good friend that I showed Steven Universe to. I introduced him to it, and he wears suspenders like every day. And I'm like, you got to get some Steven Universe suspenders. There's a crying breakfast friends button here.
And some cookie cats.
Yep. And I think I have one more on the end of Steven with his cookie cat background. Yep. There he is. So sorry for the poor quality here. I don't have high res for you, but this is one of my Steven Universe ribbons to give you some context of how many buttons I have for this show. This is one of four that I have, and it's also the shortest one. For a long time, I had some of these on my bag, and I got scared I was going to lose them. So then I glue gunned them closed, and I was still afraid I was going to lose them. So I just ended up putting them on. I put them on ribbons and tie them up in my room. So that's one of my pin ribbons.
Yeah, I can understand that. When I was a teenager, I used to wear a jacket covered in badges, and I was always shedding.
Mm-hmm. I believe I actually found one of my garnet pins. I found it in my own parking lot later, and I was like, oh no, what if I had lost this? A few of them I have doubles of because I would buy them as a set and, you know, trying to get another one that's in the set that I didn't have, but I already had the previous one. So, you know, stuff like that. But I do have another one over there that I'm looking at that you can see. That's mostly like enamel pins, and most of them are spoilery, so I won't show them to you. But eventually there will come a time where I can show you more pins. But those were all like official pins, and I think most of them were sold at Hot Topic in the States. So, but the Cartoon Network sells some like enamel pins, and there are a few special sets that were only released at conventions and stuff like that. So eventually I'll get around to showing you everything.
Cool.
Yep. Might have to try my hardest not to spoil you with small things, because I see that you always notice very small details, so I have to avoid showing you a certain thing.
Okay. Wait, why is she wearing that?
Well, I mean, now that we know, we watched Pearl get stabbed and then come back with a new outfit, so anytime anybody's got a new outfit, you're like, oh, when did you die? Right? You can't change clothes. That's happened a few times in like episodes where they'll try to advertise to us and be like, oh, is that character's wearing a different thing? It means she's going to die. It's like Cartoon Network. You don't know what you're showing us. But I have a calendar in the background that I flipped back to last month because there's something spoilery on this month. I'm like, you can't see that till episode 101.
Yeah. Well, as it stands, I can barely even see that it's, I'm mostly the palette. I can tell it's a Steven Universe calendar from here.
Right. I was just worried that there would be something that would stick out to you and be like, oh, well, she spoiled. There's like a lot of things that are like on the floor or out of the view of the camera right now that I'm like, I'm glad you can't see that.
Well, yeah, I'm thinking about it. If the tables were flipped and I was trying to do a spoiler-free Doctor Who podcast, even the shelf I'm looking at has loads of stuff that would...
Yeah. You know, going this way, there's like a rose quartz flag up there, which you've already seen now.
Yeah.
There's some stuff that I've probably inadvertently had on camera. Like just the previous episode, I was turning my camera and I was like, yeah, I hope nothing pops out that she shouldn't see right now.
Well, I can assure you, all I was looking at was the strange round-headed people last time.
Yep. Yeah. There are a few sets of toys that eventually I want to show you like the whole set of them, but I'm like, oh, there's one or two in there that, you know, either it's something Steven is wearing or it's a character that is in a configuration that I don't want you to see yet. So I'm probably being a little oversensitive to spoilers, but I don't want to spoil you. So.
Yeah, and fortunately it's not something that is sort of in your face advertised down here. So, or at least not now. Maybe it was a bit before, but then I had no context for it. It all just bounced off.
Right. One of my friends was asking, you know, like those robot voice activated things where you can ask hey, Alexa, what is blah, blah. My friend did that in his car and said, hey, I have to show you this ridiculously spoilery answer that Google has right now, and asked a Steven Universe related question. And it starts talking about like some very specific details about one of the characters and that you're not supposed to know until like season 5 or something. And I'm like, wow, way to spoil that for us.
Oh, Alexa. I'll have to be careful with that because I've been verbally asking Google to check on episode titles and numbers so I know which episode I'm editing.
Oh, I don't know how unsafe that is, but I do worry about, like, even things like looking up voice actors. It's like, so-and-so plays the character so-and-so who was revealed to blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, if Sadie's surname had been a big deal, I would have been spoiled strangely inadvertently for that by looking up someone else called Sadie Miller.
Right, I remember that. I remember you telling me that.
But yeah, I do remember a bit of fuss when the movie came out. But at the time, I only sort of knew Steven Universe as that show I should get around to watching someday. So even though I know I looked straight at the movie poster at the time because they were doing a special cinema showing of it, but I can't remember anything about it except that it said Steven Universe the movie.
Right.
Because nothing else meant anything to me. I didn't even know if any of these people on the poster were Steven or even if Steven Universe was his name or what.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting how little things that have no context actually burrow into your brain. Yeah, I definitely experienced that because my introduction to this series was a ginormous spoiler. And I wasn't surprised by the spoiler when I saw it in context, but there were so many other things that I should have figured out based on that spoiler. And just the fact that I didn't have context for it meant that I had no idea. And for the movie, I'm not sure why, but they were very hush-hush about the main villain's name. I guess, you know, because they wanted everybody to be guessing about, you know, since everybody's a gemstone in this, it's like, will it be this gemstone? Will it be that gemstone? My idea is it's this gemstone. And, you know, everybody's got their guesses. And they were super hush-hush about what the main villain's name was going to be.
It's really interesting. Yeah, I guess you're kind of playing with the viewers there because as most of the guest characters or most of the characters have Gemstone's name, they're already in a limited arena as to, you know, what they're guessing. Like, I would not be surprised if some of the characters I've made up for hypotheticals have turned out to be actual characters just because I happen to have chosen a Gemstone name that Rebecca Sugar or friends also chose later.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, we talked before that I came that close with Olivine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I might have brought this up in a previous conversation, but there was a thing where I did a Q&A on one of my channels. Someone asked me, like, oh, if you were a gem on Steven Universe, what would you be? And like, oh, I would be this. And much, much later, it's like that name was used, but not the color that I used. It was like, you know, comes in various colors. And I flashed a picture on the screen of which gem I would be. And so it wasn't the same color, but it was the same name. And I'm like, oh, well, I guess my Gemsona is now a character. There are occasionally places in this show where they'll like mention a gem name and then not show you what it looks like. So then you're like, oh, are you going to show us what this looks like? Or are you just never going to say it again? And it's like, it can go either way with this show. So that's fun.
Well, I almost made a joke earlier about Lapis and Peridot fusing. And I was going, oh, what kind of, I guess there'll be some kind of gem that's bluish green. What kind of gem's colored aquamarine? Oh, yeah, aquamarine. It was like, oh, even making things up, I'm actually accidentally choosing actual rocks.
Oh, gosh.
I don't even know if the gem is named after the color or the other way around.
That's March's birthstone.
Ah, so it is.
Yeah, I remember that because my sister was born in March and I liked her birthstone more than I liked mine at the time. And now that is not the case because mine's garnet.
Yeah, we both just kind of landed on our birthstones being our favorite gem characters.
Yeah, this is just a really nice bonus for me. And I mean, just when I was younger, I had like a cheap, I guess it was a glass imitation ring series where my sisters and I were like, let's get our gemstones, our birthstones. And I thought that both of my sisters had sparklier, prettier stones than mine, whereas mine was very dark red. And so it looked like it didn't reflect light very much. And it was not like sparkly and showing off all of its facets and stuff. It was just not as, you know, attractive to my young eyes, I suppose. But, you know, Then I have a couple of pieces of jewelry that have garnet stones on them, and I feel a little weird about it. I'm like, well, now does this mean like somebody fought her and she's like currently inert and I'm walking around wearing her on my ears?
Also, yikes. Also want to watch your spine if she suddenly unravels or uncovers.
Yikes. Yeah, I probably don't want her hanging off of my ear. She's very big. Oof. So that was a fun digression for an otherwise pretty short, less heavy episode, but I enjoy them nonetheless. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about with political power?
I think we've about covered it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this episode and the previous one are sort of a type doing the slow burn towards things.
Yeah. If we weren't like aware of where the season ends, it almost seems like we would be expecting 4 or 5 more episodes before a 2-part season finale, right?
Yeah. Were the next two shown in one block again?
They weren't.
That's right. You said earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. They very much go together. And I think it'll still make sense for us to discuss them separately because like a lot of season finales, I feel like they do have separate titles. They are considered separate episodes, but I feel like the first one gets overshadowed by the second one pretty easily. So it'll be fun to kind of discuss it and all of its merits together. There are a few like that in this show that really get overshadowed by stuff that happened that was aired at the same time.
Yeah, I remember you said that there are a couple of actual double-length ones as yes. opposed to 2-parters, but I guess that's a whole different thing.
It is. There's 2 22-minute episodes and there's 1 44-minute episode, which is practically a little movie, you know? And then there's the actual movie. So, yeah. But this one is considered 2 separate episodes. It might as well be a 2-part episode because of the way that it is portrayed, like... It's you really shouldn't have one without the other. So that we will definitely take a little break in between them to talk about them and then go right into the second one when we pick up next time.
Yay.
Or I guess the episode title is the next thing I should say. It's called The Return.
Okay, that's even more ominous than The Message.
Yeah.
Kind of hoping
you don't know the return of what?
I was kind of hoping that they're not just going to pull the rug out and Marty's come back to town or something.
Oh, boy. Yeah. That would be terrible. Oh, my God. Oh, no. I'm just imagining them trolling us really badly.
Oh, yeah. There we go. Lapis has just been catastrophizing. And it just so happens that Marty's got a job as a gem notice server in the intervening years.
No.
And all it is the gem equivalent of a ticket.
No. Okay. You know what? We need to go back in time with the time thing. With the Steven and the Stevens, and have you write for this show. What do you think?
I occasionally think of trying to flesh that fever dream one out into an actual alternate fanfic. So.
Oh my goodness. You know, I might have to start reading fanfiction if you do that. All right. Well, I guess we'll pick up next time.
Good night, everyone.
Yes. Good night.
You've been listening to Ivy and Daria on Not So Giant Women.
You can find episodes of the show in video form by looking up Not So Giant Women on YouTube.
Or in audio form at anchor.fm/notsogiantwomen or your podcatcher of choice. You can also find us on Facebook.
Audio production by Daria.
Video production and music by Ivy.
Daria can also be heard on Podsploitation, the Ozploitation podcast.
And Ivy at her Steven Universe fan blog at love-takes-work.tumblr.com.
Steven Universe was created by Rebecca Sugar and remains property of Cartoon Network.
No infringement is intended.